Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, and my co-host for our monthly ethics sessions is here with me, Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. And we're talking about the various habits we have that affect our health that also affect the bigger picture of society, whether it's money or whether it's just everybody's regard. And I want to talk a little bit about stigma, because I think there's a cost to stigma as well.
Yeah, you bet there's a cost to stigma. And of course, stigma, or the way we view these various habits, has changed over the years. I think most listeners can relate to that. If you look at some of the old movies in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, it's very common to see the desirable people smoking.
Yes, the cool people were smoking.
The cool people, that's right.
And those old movies, you see smoke throughout the air. I mean, it just permeates everything that's happening.
Yeah. Also, not only in the movies, but when you went to the movies yourself,
yes,
you could sit there and smell smoke. People would be smoking in public places. So our norms have changed.
And then science came along. And science really kind of changed how that was regarded, didn't it?
Science changed it, and of course, after science, our norms of what was cool and what was healthy and so on changed too. And so now the question is, for people who smoke, most people who smoke and people who are overweight, for that matter, feel a little bit stigmatized. They feel like people are focusing on them inappropriately.
They do, but even overweight is a little bit different. I mean, overweight, we look at overweight people, and any listeners who've ever seen me talk or seen me appear somewhere, they know I'm overweight. Weight is something I've battled all my life. I have felt that stigma on many occasions, and I try to overcome it, but I can't always do it. So let's talk about overweight for a moment. In some cultures, overweight is the acceptable. In some cultures where food is more difficult to come by, if you're overweight, you must also be rich, or at least that's how you're regarded, but not in our culture.
That's right. And those cultures where if you're overweight and you're rich, it's usually in a culture where food is highly valued,
yes,
and it's hard to come by.
That's right.
There are also cultures where it's the social thing to do, to eat. You come to my house and I will feed you.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're children, you're encouraged to eat.
That's right. That's right. Or the family gathers together and mom's saying, eat, eat. And that's the way she shows love.
That's right. Then over time, I think if you go to the art museum, you'll see Renoir paintings, you'll see Rubens paintings. And those artists' ideal women were fairly robust, very ample.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of the historical depictions of women, particularly, and men too, they are robust. So we've really changed a little bit in our ideas about what it means to be overweight.
And you know, too, I think of alcoholism. I think back to the days, maybe in the 60s and 70s, when Dean Martin was holding a glass, you know, full of ice cubes in some of his shows. And the alcoholic was funny. But the alcoholic's not so funny today.
Well, I think we're very ambivalent about it, because I,
yes,
still see depictions of where people get a little tipsy and that's supposed to be funny. But, you know, there is this pervasive alcoholism, basically, throughout the culture, and it's not just confined to any particular stratum, socioeconomic stratum.
Right.
I think it's throughout. We have this concept of the well-compensated alcoholic, somebody who functions very well in their job or whatever they're doing, and they still are dependent upon alcohol.
Yes, yes. And then I think of choices like when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, it was so cool to be as tan as I could possibly,
yes,
be. And, you know, in those days, I was just crispy. I'm very fair-skinned, and I would get very sunburned at the beginning of every season, and I would peel, peel, peel. And now, not so much. I mean, even to wear tanning salons now are going to have to pay taxes to support health care reform, because we know that getting a tan can be unhealthy.
Be unhealthy, melanoma, other kinds of skin cancers.
That's right. So the idea of stigma and health and how it ties together with money, there are many, many, examples of it, but beyond that, it changes over time.
It does change. I think the listeners will be interested in something that Dr. Cosgrove said last year. Dr. Cosgrove is the CEO of the Cleveland Clinic, obviously in Cleveland, Ohio, a very famous, world-famous healthcare organization. And about 2 or 3 years ago, the Cleveland Clinic decided not to hire people who smoke. Their existing employees who smoked, they were, you know, weren't going to fire them, and they were going to give them smoking advice and so on. But they decided not to hire smokers. And that was a little bit controversial. And there are some other institutions who have followed suit.
And they're not hiring smokers specifically because the health care costs are so high.
Because of health care costs and also, I think, because of the example.
Okay.
But about a year ago, Dr. Cosgrove was being interviewed by a national reporter, and he said something like this. If it were up to him, and if there were not legal issues, he would not only stop hiring smokers, he would also stop hiring obese people.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And that, you know, that
he would
was
not
very
hire me.
I don't regard you.
Well, okay. But even still, what I'm saying is he would not hire somebody because they were overweight. And what's he going to do? Have them stand on a scale?
Well, he didn't go into those details.
I see.
I'm not quite sure what motivated him to say that, but I think he wanted to make that known and to maybe start a little discussion, which he certainly did. So there is a stigma, certainly, of associated with smoking, with alcohol, with being overweight, and so on. And I think we need to be very careful about this. I think we need to separate the health effects, the negative health effects of all of these behaviors, and focus on them and try to correct them from the social stigma. In other words, we should not disrespect somebody who is overweight or is smoking.
You know, it makes me think of what we're talking about here are behaviors. And we're looking at having to change some behaviors. But I also know that there are examples of things that we thought were behaviors over the years that may not have been, and we're finding out that science affects them. So, for instance, one example would be alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And so we always assumed that alcoholism was simply a behavior and somebody became addicted to alcohol. But what we have found now is that there is some genetic predisposition to alcoholism. So at what point do we blame? And that's what we're doing here is we're blaming people for their behaviors. At what point do we draw that line between the blame for something and taking responsibility versus how somebody's born and they can't help it?
Yeah. So, in my medical career, I've lived through this.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived through what you just described, Tricia, mm-hmm. and that is initially in my career, we regarded alcoholics or people who are dependent upon alcohol as fully responsible for their behavior. And if they could just have enough gumption, they could cure it.
Suck it up.
That's right. And now we know, as you said, that there are certain genetic predispositions to alcohol dependency. My view is in the middle. My view is that, and let's take the example of diabetes.
Okay.
Diabetes is unequivocally a disease, a disorder,
yes.
and even some genetic predisposition to diabetes, although it's augmented by being overweight and so on.
But there are many people with diabetes who are not overweight.
Who are not overweight, that's right.
And clearly they must have some genetic predisposition
toward
it.
So this actually gets to my point.
Okay,
that
good.
That we can do things if we have diabetes. There are things that we can do to ameliorate that disease, to improve it, to help it, and sometimes even to make us functionally without diabetes, if we have mild diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with alcohol predisposition. I think there's a certain amount of responsibility we can take as individuals to deal with whatever we have. So it's not just that we can't help ourselves,
mm-hmm.
or that we have full responsibility. It's a balance.
And it is a balance. But what's interesting is that we don't know who those people are until they get there. Somebody does not become, they might be diagnosed as pre-diabetes, but nobody's diagnosed as being pre-alcoholic. And most alcoholics, I think, start when they're young. You know, maybe they're in high school drinking too early, or maybe they're in college.
Mm-hmm.
That was certainly my experience with my ex-husband who started drinking in college, and he just never stopped. You know, and I assumed when we got out of college he would, but clearly he could not. And he went on to basically affect his entire family. And he was what you talked about was the functional, very high achieving person who could function with alcohol. So how can you tell when somebody is predisposed to this? Because we don't have genetic testing, as far as I know, for alcoholism.
Although we have some genes that may be helpful in
yes.
telling us who's predisposed, we don't really have a gene for that. That's absolutely right. Well, we can't tell. But we also know that prudent behavior when one is growing up probably predisposes to prudent behavior as an adult. What that means is that inasmuch as people who are growing up can control these things, you shouldn't go on binges, you shouldn't smoke. Shouldn't,
yeah, but isn't that easier said than done to a young person?
Oh, it's absolutely. And you don't contemplate these health consequences or even dying when you're younger.
Absolutely true. You know, with smoking, we'll go back to smoking for a moment. Once the science came in to show us exactly what kinds of negative effects smoking had on people, we started legislating toward smoking. And certainly there's always been kind of an age where you could purchase these kinds of things and everybody would do what they could to get around it. There's also a speed limit we give people when they're driving to try to contain some safety issues. So we start to introduce some legislation. And that's kind of where I'd like to stop. We're going to take a quick break for the news. But let's talk about how we see our future in terms of what we know about these addictive behaviors and how they affect us as individuals and society and what some of those possibilities might be, whether or not that's a slippery slope when we come back after the news.
I love to talk about slippery slopes.
Aha, there you go. Very good. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a few minutes. This is Upstate's Health Link on air on 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate, here with my co-host for our monthly ethics sessions, Dr. Gregory Eastwood. We've been talking about paying for other people's bad health choices as a topic that we think you listeners will be interested in, maybe as a conversation when we're finished this morning. And Dr. Eastwood, as we took the break, we introduced the idea of, all right, we now know that people have bad habits. We know that there is a cost to us personally and certainly to our families and to society. So to what extent now are we going to look at regulating, reining in, looking at these bad habits as something that needs to be fixed, and if individuals can't fix them themselves, what's society going to do to help them?
Yeah, this gets to a fundamental American dilemma that we have. How much are we responsible for our own behavior, and how much does the government or some other higher authority step in? And that's, you know, we deal with that on many different levels throughout our country and throughout our country's history.
We as Americans think we should have the right to make the choices we want to make.
That's right. The right not to wear a helmet, the right not to drink fluoridated water, you know, these kinds of things.
And, you know, we even talked in the first segment about the fact that if we are smokers, we are now paying more for our fire insurance on our homes because we're smokers.
That's right. So that gets into something that most people in this country accept.
That's right.
If we own a house that's in a floodplain, we sort of assume that we're going to be paying more insurance.
Yes, because
house.
We chose to buy that house in the floodplain.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there are certain things that we accept. Now, some of the things we don't accept as a population is this idea of a tax on sugar.
Yes.
In our beverages.
Yes.
Some people accept that, some people don't.
Right. And we're being asked now to consider, or I think the governor's asking us to consider, whether or not we should be paying one extra cent per ounce or two extra cents. And the reason is because the state is having to pay for the health care for people who become obese, have diabetes, and so forth.
Yes. Now, that's one reason. Of course, it gets very complicated because another reason could be that the state needs more money because
that's
the state needs money.
That's true. And if we choose to drive too fast, they pull us over and we have to pay a ticket. And what we could say would be, that's the penalty for driving too fast. Or we could say, I knew that was the risk, but I chose to take it anyway.
Yeah. So I think a good example of what you just said, Tricia, is the recent crackdown on cell phoning in cars.
Yes, texting.
No, texting and now... Every day, the newspaper talks about how many new tickets were issued and so on, and also the revenue that's associated with that.
That's right.
And what's going to happen when this crackdown stops and so on. So I think there's an issue of consistency on the part of whoever is enforcing these laws.
That's right. But now we're talking about sugar and salt. It seems that the headlines everywhere now are that salt might even be more dangerous than alcohol, or that sugar, you know, is creating this obesity epidemic, which we've documented. Science shows us there is this epidemic.
But it's not just sugar.
Okay.
And it's other things, too. It's, you know, other kinds of, it's the double portions that you get when you go to a restaurant.
Supersizing.
Are we going to tax that?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to do something that we talked about in the last segment, somehow prohibit people who are overweight or exhibiting unhealthy behaviors from certain kinds of employment? You know, you talked about the slippery slope earlier. And what a slippery slope is really is a continuum from one thing to another. And there
is a
If we do this, then something else is going to happen.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. It's a concept, but you know, we deal with this concept all the time. And as a society, even though there's a fair amount of angst in resolving some of these things, we generally, as a society, do draw the line somewhere. Mm-hmm. And most people adhere to that. So I'm not worried about slippery slopes. What concerns me a little bit is the process, you know, the debate about arriving at whatever our consensus is.
You know, I look at that debate, and of course, we read about it, we hear about it, and so forth. And now we are in the midst of figuring out how to pay for healthcare reform. And in the midst of paying for healthcare reform, they're starting to talk about some of these things. Is your health insurance going to be more expensive if you're overweight? Or is it going to be more expensive if you're a smoker? I think some of those things are already going on, if not in an employment situation where you get your health care from your employer, probably not. But for individuals who are having to purchase it on their own, it already is.
That's right. Again, this reflects some of our ambivalence about how we should apply some of these principles. We already said that most people will accept anyway that if you're a smoker, you might pay higher health insurance or you might pay higher homeowner insurance. But most people will not accept the notion that if you acquire a disease, let's say I have a heart attack tomorrow, that I should then pay more for my health insurance going forward.
Right. We kind of look at that as society's obligation, perhaps, to pay for people who couldn't help, quote unquote. But when we're talking about behaviors and that whole question about whether or not we can affect them ourselves by changing our behaviors, now I have to go to smoking. You know, when we finally, the science showed us how difficult smoking was, and they then proved that companies that manufactured cigarettes were putting, they turned up all these memos that showed that they were specifically trying to put more nicotine into cigarettes to make people smoke more. All right, now we know that companies have specifically been putting things into our food to make us crave more of their food so they can make more money. We've held tobacco companies responsible for non-smoking campaigns. Do we begin holding some of the corporations responsible for helping us eat less or at least get less of the salt and the sugar and those things that make us fat? Do we start holding them responsible?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to answer that directly.
No, but I don't want you to answer
but let me just comment on that.
Sure.
You know, this gets at one of the fundamental principles of our country, that is the right of free enterprise and the right to make a profit and that sort of thing. And sometimes that borders on what some people think is unethical and some people think is perfectly okay. To make your food tastier and more desirable, what could be wrong with that?
No, and if you're a stockholder in the company that does that, you're thrilled that people are eating more of it.
That's right. One of the first examples I know of this is that at sports events or when you go to the movies, you buy popcorn that's laden with salt.
Yes.
Well, what does that do? That makes you want to buy a drink.
That's right.
Which is, of course, laden with sugar.
That's right.
But it still means more income for whoever is selling the drinks.
It does. And I even remember an argument about 10 years ago that McDonald's was now making their straws wider, bigger round, more circumference, so that you would drink more with one sip. So therefore, you would want to order a larger drink because you might run out.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is something our listeners can ponder, whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. I think it would be a big step to go from taxing or sort of blaming the cigarette manufacturers to blaming the food manufacturers.
Yeah, I think it would be too. But, you know, when it comes to paying for something as expensive as healthcare reform, I'm going to guess we're going to hear a lot more of these kinds of approaches, at least being thrown out and discussed, if not answers are being arrived at.
Yeah, let me make one final comment before we finish, and that has to do with personal responsibility. We've talked about perhaps blaming the manufacturers of various commodities, and there is enough blame to go around, I would say that. On the other hand, each of us does have a responsibility, and we do have control over these things. We can choose not to smoke. We can choose not to take the second helpings.
Absolutely, and we can choose to do all of those things. Some, it's easier than others. I can only guess that science over time is going to show us a little more closely who can make the choice versus who can't, who is truly controlled by something that they can't help genetically perhaps versus somebody who really can make the choice. It will become refined over time, I think. But certainly, it's an interesting conversation for now, and I'm so happy that you were able to join us this morning to talk more about it.
A pleasure to be here again.
And listeners, we are going to take a break. We do hope that this is a discussion you'll have in your homes, in your families. Decide whether you think it's a good idea or whether you don't. You're going to hear a lot more about it in the future. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.